Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
A steal by Iverson! Posting in! He won it! He won the game!
Be there to say absolutely no!
Three from Scott! Yes! Do you love this game?
Oh, baby, it is Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University. WilmU Works. Danny Pommels here along with the Kevin Rice from Temple University. And our guest co-host is our esteemed producer from Sixers pre and post game, Brian Brennan, joining us to kind of break down this draft because he has his elbows deep in all of these names, faces, and people that are being selected here in the NBA draft. I guess it is really no need to talk about the draft because Daryl Morey made it so that we talked about this Sixers roster changing early in the day. He dealt Al Horford around 5:30, I would say. Actually, Brian Brennan called me to break the news to me, but I wouldn't have heard it if he hadn't called me. But
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Al Horford being shipped to Oklahoma City in exchange. Well, I should add that the Sixers also give a 2025 first-round pick and the 34th overall selection in this year's draft to Oklahoma City in exchange for Danny Green and Terrence Ferguson. What did you make of that when you heard about it? I'll start with you, Kevin, because when we think about all the stuff that we talked about leading up to this draft, we all thought that Morey would have something up his sleeve, but didn't quite expect that type of splash.
Didn't think it was going to happen that quickly. I was eating dinner when it happened and ended up just leaving the table because my phone was buzzing on the other rooms, like just off the hook. And I was like, what the heck is going on? Horford's gone. It's kind of a just sweet release of a trade. Just Twitter was almost a bloodbath of people just saying like, goodbye and good riddance forever. I never want to see you in this town again. And Al Horford's sister, Anna, also was pretty fond of the move because she did not like Philadelphia and made that known. But I was surprised Morey was able to pull one off this quickly. And to benefit the Sixers, they didn't give up their pick this year. It's a lightly protected 2025 first rounders, protected 1 through 6. The Thunder are probably going to get it either way. But I'm ecstatic to the move. They got rid of their biggest log in the jam and moving forward from here.
Brian, they didn't give up much either, if you really think about it. I mean,
that's what's stunning to me. I mean, I thought this would be the biggest thing that Morey would want to do all offseason is just figure out some way to get off of Horford. But, I mean, if you would have told me that they could do that without giving up the first, without giving up Matisse Thybulle, I'm just pretty stunned that they were able to get rid of him that easily. You know, teams like Oklahoma City that are rebuilding, that just want to collect assets and don't mind taking somebody else's big contract to get picks and that kind of stuff. I mean, those are the teams you want to prey on. And he definitely did that. So, like Kevin said, I mean, you're getting rid of your biggest issue right off the bat. And, you know, I'm still just in disbelief, even though it was 6 hours ago at this point, that he was able to pull it off that quickly. It's stunning. It really is.
Yeah, we are taping this podcast after a long day of work and the NBA draft is winding down. And the Sixers dealing Horford really not only gave them Danny Green in return and a wing defender and Terrence Ferguson, it is the cap relief and the fact that they are out from under that albatross of a contract, Al Horford, 4 years, $109 million. I think, you know, we'll get into other moves that were made. We'll get into the draft picks. We'll get into other trades that the Sixers did. But I think the thing that's like the elephant in the room for me is just the damage that was done last offseason to this roster with the salary cap space, with the draft assets they lost. Like, Daryl Morey's actually coming in, cleaning the house, and trying to reshape this roster. It just brings just so much attention to the fact that they were so screwed up before he got here. Am I wrong, though? I mean, we've talked about it, but, man, it just is a colossal mess.
Yeah, it was really telling that, like, this just one move and like Sixers fans erupt in just like ecstasy over it was actually a good move that worked the margins well. It was last offseason with kind of was like a culmination of the entire Colangelo era of just bad, short-sighted moves that handcuff you later down the road. And this was one that Daryl Morey identified a team with a need, which was the Thunder with future picks. They're in their rebuild, retool era, not really sure. But they know they're probably going to be good in 2025 and they can get a valuable first round pick. And the Sixers know that they're hopefully also going to be very good in 2025. And that pick isn't as valuable to them as the Thunder. So getting rid of Horford was obviously key. And you don't want to give up a first when you don't have to. But getting off of Horford, giving up a first that won't be valuable in the long run is great and something that would never have happened in the last 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought what was going to happen here, ultimately, even before Morey came on board, is whoever the next GM, next coach is, they're going to give Simmons and Embiid every chance to work together. They're not trading one of those two guys until they move all the other chess pieces around and figure out how to make it work. And so by getting rid of Horford, you've just made a more functional team. And we'll get to Josh Richardson, but I think that's another way that they're made a more functional team. I mean, you're going to bring Seth Curry in here, pure shooter, 44% career three-point shooter. He's one of the best three-point shooters to this point in his career in the history of the league. So you bring in a guy like that, that's going to get a lot of those Josh Richardson minutes now, and he's going to get wide open looks. It's going to fit so much better now.
Definitely. We'll table that Josh Richardson-Seth Curry combo for a little bit later in the podcast. But let's talk about the dude the Sixers are getting. You know, you get rid of Al Horford, the dudes, plural, that they're getting, but you get rid of Al Horford. The feature player here is Danny Green, a guy – who Brian Brennan knows well from his times at University of North Carolina, an alum of that school, and I enjoyed watching them win a title while he was there. But what do you guys make of Danny Green here, as he has a career 40% three-point clip that he shoots at, but he had a down year last year with the Lakers, although the year prior with Toronto, I think he shot in the mid-40s from three. So are they getting a player in Danny Green on the downside of his career? Should expectations be lowered for Sixers fans when they think about what the Danny Green they have seen and what the Sixers are getting now?
I think Danny Green's on one of those guys always on the short list of people who want to surround Ben or Joel with shooters. I feel like Danny Green's always the name that comes around, and they finally got him, which is kind of fun. Last year kind of just stunk. To be honest, he
with
did
the Lakers.
Not play like Danny Green. But the Raptors and the Spurs years before, he was incredible. And if he can get another team with just like a young core of Joel and Ben and play off of them, that's good for both of them. And I think that's very, very valuable moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, I think Danny Green is clearly on the downside. But to Kevin's point, when you saw him 2 years ago in that Toronto series, I thought he was really good in that series.
Yeah.
Really good for them in that whole playoff run. So even if he's not what he was, I think he's definitely going to be a guy that can be out there in playoff series and you're not going to feel bad about it. He's not one of those guys that takes anything off the table. And if he's hitting shots, you leave him out there. And if he's not hitting shots, you know, you take him out and you go with somebody else. But he knows what to do, knows where to go, and he's made a million – we've all seen him make a million playoff shots. So definitely an awesome guy to have around you at him and Curry now at shooters around, you know, around Ben, around Joel, around Tobias Harris. You know, he might be taking Furkan Korkmaz's minutes, let's say, in a playoff series. I mean, I think that's a big deal. That's a big deal.
That's a good point to bring up, because I'm thinking about the way he fits into the second unit. And if you're upgrading, you know, say you lose, you know, Glenn Robinson as expected, Alec Burks as expected, you know, Furkan is hit or miss, depending on how Doc Rivers wants to use him. But a guy like Danny Green with 11 years of NBA experience, deep run playoff experience, championship experience, you can't quantify that type of addition to a Sixers team that needs savvy veterans, people who've been around the block, guys who know how to get it done. And you can see Doc Rivers and Daryl Morey kind of playing the, you know, pulling the strings of the marionette, so to speak, and kind of pushing things a certain direction. So losing Horford, who Brett Brown brought off the bench, you know, gives Tobias the opportunity to slide to the four and play more minutes there, where he's quicker probably than guys at that position. And it also frees up, you know, the cap space as well. I'm curious if you guys feel like the Sixers, the fit with Horford was bad here. I kind of see him having a rejuvenation with OKC. I don't see him being a bad player. I just think the fit was bad here. Do you guys agree?
Sort of. I thought he was going to be a lot better here the first year.
Especially. I thought he was, but once I realized it, I'm like, well, I don't know if he's bad. He just doesn't fit here.
I don't know if he's going to fit in Oklahoma City either. He looks like a guy who just kind of is going to fall off quickly. I could be terribly wrong too. He might have a rejuvenation like Chris Paul did in Oklahoma City. Maybe the water's different there, but I don't see him really having that rebirth.
Something to consider though. Steven Adams is entering the last year of his deal, and they have Horford under contract for 3 years. So they kind of have a plug and play situation there. When Adams, they let him walk, Horford can step in at those center minutes.
That is true.
Yeah. I thought Horford looked like very early in the season. I think there was a game like second or third game of the season. I want to say it was Detroit and Joel didn't play, and Horford looked awesome. He had like dunks on the break and he looked super athletic, and that dude just never showed up again. He just looked athletically a little bit washed. I was surprised. So I don't know how much he really has left as like a top flight player. He clearly knows how to play and clearly is playing out of position here. But the guy we saw in Boston, I don't know if we're seeing that guy again, a guy who's very valuable on a team making deep runs in the playoffs. I don't think that guy's coming back.
I don't think so either.
Do you feel any pressure? Do you think Ben Simmons feels any pressure, you know, to kind of make it all work to if he's going to be the facilitator, the guy on the break? Do you feel like there's any pressure here on Ben to kind of fit in and make it all work, as well as, you know, show off his shooting as well to kind of fit in with the new mode they're going in?
I think there'd be less pressure on Ben just because he's obviously at his best on the break. And when the game slows down in those half court sets, he just gets like planned for so much easier. Like teams just know what to do when it slows down. So I feel like now with Curry and Danny Green, they're going to have more options to run Ben off screens, off everything you can do on offense. And there's going to be just a ton more spacing for him to operate and see the game at a high level like he can, and still get out on the break like he loves to. So I don't think there's more pressure on him. I think he's going to be able to play a little more freely and hopefully more like the Ben Simmons of even his rookie year and sophomore year.
Yeah, I think this team, the way they're constructed, kind of takes more advantage of the things he does well. You know, he's one of the best guys in the league at setting guys up for open threes, and now you've got Seth Curry, Danny Green, and don't forget Shake Milton. You know what I mean? They have a lot more shooting around him now. And I think that's the team I've always said, like if they were ever to get rid of Ben, the team I want to see Ben with is like, I want to see four shooters around Ben Simmons, just see what it looks like. And I feel like they're getting like a lot closer to being able to run lineups out sometimes that look like that. And I think it's just going to make Ben Simmons so much better.
And if it gives you that advantage, if Joel does take a break, I think Joel's still the centerpiece of this team and Ben a little bit under him. But if Joel does take load management or does get hurt, then those Ben shooting lineups are just going to be really fun to watch.
Hey, it's going to be a 72 game sprint to the finish for sure. Mm-hmm. As these guys try to come together quickly, a lot of new people and voices. I've been saying that a lot, Brian. I don't know how you feel about that, but it's a lot of new people and voices top to bottom throughout the whole organization.
I don't mind it that much when it's veterans, though. Like, Doc Rivers, not his first rodeo. Clearly, Daryl Morey's not either. Danny Green, we talked about. Seth Curry's been around a little bit now. Like, I'm okay, like, with a lot of these guys. They know what to do. They understand roles. Like, I think Seth Curry's going to understand his role. Danny Green's going to understand his role. You know what I mean? Like, these are guys that even, like, maybe a Josh Richardson probably wanted a little bit bigger role than he got here. You know what I mean? I think the guys that are bringing in are sort of like elite role players, especially Seth Curry. And that's kind of what you need around superstars.
Yeah, I agree with that. Josh's numbers as a ball handler went down from his last year at Miami to his first year here. And even just going back to when they had Tobias, Ben, Joel, and Jimmy, it's a good on paper plan. Like, you get four awesome players, like, who's going to beat you? But the there's one ball argument does come into play at some points, and getting guys who know their roles and getting guys who know their roles who you can retool. Like, you can get not another Danny Green, but another Danny Green type player, another Seth Curry type player. If they end up leaving a free agency or you trade them, those types of players are way more valuable than just loading up, front loading on stars and just having a gutted bench like we saw in the Raptors series.
Tis the season to thrill at the Nissan year-end sales event. Get in, then get out and experience the most riveting ride of the year in a brand new Nissan. These savings on Nissan's lineup are sure to raise your pulse. All right, let's move on. As the evening was eventful, a lot happened here on this draft night. And we heard, you know, Brian and Kevin talk about it a bit. The Sixers acquiring Seth Curry from the Dallas Mavericks in exchange for the 36th overall selection in the draft this season, as well as Josh Richardson, one and done here in Philadelphia. Never, you know, we hardly knew ye, Josh Richardson. I got to admit, I was feeling the Demolition Man dyed locks he had, but it was not much more than that as far as his impact here on the 76ers. Before we talk about Seth Curry and all that he brings surrounding Ben with more shooters, Josh Richardson, it kind of puzzling, man. I mean, we had the whole Tennessee connection with Tobias Harris. I really thought, you know, that Josh would be one of those, you know, first in, last out guys, and everyone's competing, you know, for you know, who practice prowess and who's working the hardest and things like that. But, you know, he was plagued by some injuries, didn't quite have the fit that he had in Miami. What were some things that stuck out to you guys about how, you know, that just didn't quite work out here in South Philly?
I was really bummed it didn't work out, because everything I've heard about him as a person is he just radiates, like, just has an aura around him. Like, that's Josh Richardson. Like, he's a really cool and nice, friendly, down to earth dude. It was also nothing like I got more pleasure out of anything else this season than like watching a good Josh Richardson game, like the game Jimmy Butler
Clippers
returned.
Clippers.
Yeah.
Great Clippers in that game. Yeah.
Jimmy Butler's return, the Christmas Day game when he's hitting threes and like kind of in his bag. He was so much fun to watch. But then on the flip end of it, when he was not having a good game, when he was having decision making problems, it was pretty painful. But I really like the trade for the Mavericks. I like it for both sides. But Luka and Josh paired together, that's a good backcourt for the Mavericks moving forward. You get that off. You get Luka's playmaking and shooting off the dribble, and then Richardson defense and catch and shoot. I like it for both sides. But I don't really know what went wrong with Josh besides what went wrong with everyone on the Sixers, which was just the lack of spacing and shooting and dribble creation.
Yeah, I think Josh just wasn't what they need. It's not that he's not a good player. I agree with Kevin that he's going to fit really well next to Luka. You need defense and all that kind of stuff around Luka. But Josh Richardson here, you need shooting. You need shooting around those guys. And he shot 34% from three, 43% from the field. He just wasn't a good enough shooter. And that's really it. And he's a good defender. I think his defense, maybe his reputation was like slightly overrated. I never really saw him like lock down some of the best scorers on other teams or anything like that.
He had plenty of opportunities.
Yeah, yeah. I think he was just good defensively. He's just a good defensive player. He's not a elite or like difference-making defensive player.
And it's easy to recognize that next to Ben Simmons, who is flat-out elite. So that's a great point by you. And we got to go full disclosure here. Brian Brennan, a big Luka guy. So
my God. I do love Luka.
Yeah, man. Interesting fit there in Dallas for sure. And also, in full transparency, Seth Curry is Doc Rivers' son-in-law. Is that right? He's yeah. married to Doc yeah. Rivers' yeah. daughter?
That's right.
It was the whole ordeal in the playoff series because Paul George dated Doc Rivers' daughter and then might have cheated on her. And then they broke up and Seth Curry swooped in. And then Seth Curry almost knocked Paul George and Clippers out of the playoffs in the first round.
TMZ wow. Rice. His name is TMZ Rice.
I'm up name. On it. A lot of NBA drama.
Yeah, there's plenty of that to go around for sure. And plenty of that drama with the 76ers. And if we're going to talk Josh Richardson, what about his comments about Brett Brown? They kind of ring a little bit more true now
that at the end of the season, he said that there was an accountability issue with this team. So it to me, you have guys like him who end up being here for a cup of coffee, but clear, especially coming from a program or a franchise like Miami, where there are regimented and understood boundaries and expectations. And then to come here to Philly, he noticed that there was something wrong here. And I think that his words ring a lot more true now, having seen all the changes that have been made this offseason. He's gone, but that made a lasting impression on me. What did you guys think of that now, retrospectively, looking back at those comments?
Yeah, I mean, clearly Brett ran a loose ship. I mean, that's pretty obvious. And, you know, they've kind of let Embiid and Simmons, you know, run the show a little bit. And it'll be really interesting because Doc Rivers is kind of known as, he's not exactly known as a taskmaster either, you know, but he does come with a little more gravitas, a championship pedigree. He's been a coach for a long time. He's coached better players than these guys. So it will be interesting to see, like, if there's any difference there. But I also think, like, I just think Ben and Joel, I expect them to be, like, a little more grown up and, like, a little more just, like, ready to win this season. I think in general the whole organization's going to seem like that. It's just my take. But I think they're going to seem a little more professional.
Would you expect a chiseled Joel Embiid, a cut, a refined Joel Embiid here?
I don't know about that. I just think, like, I just expect them to be more professional game in and game out.
That's okay.
Kind of what I expect to see.
Yeah, I'm down with that. I like the loose ship terminology of it. I think I'm at the point where I think Brett was like an acquired taste for players, because through the process years of just the terrible teams, the players loved him. Like Covington, Isaiah Cannon, McConnell loved Brett Brown and raved about him. And it seems like every player, the Jimmy Butlers, the Josh Richardsons, just kind of come in and out and don't get to, I can't speak for their experiences, but like don't get to know him, I guess. But I think Brett is going to have success elsewhere. I think he is a good coach. I definitely was time for a change. And I think Ben and Joel were kind of done with him too, which was weird. But I think they're going to be playing a little more inspired. And Danny mentioned there's a lot of new voices everywhere. But I think it's a good kind of new voices when it's all experienced coaches, players who all obviously want to win. And everyone wants to win. But it's guys who are like dedicated to winning, who understand how the game is changing, how it's going to change in the future, how it's played now. It's inspiring to play with a group of guys like that.
Brett likes guys that bring effort. Effort. is that close? Effort? Sure. Is that
effort?
I mean, I do wonder, as like things were, you know, going downhill last season, I do wonder if like the, you know, Brett's kind of lame duck status, if you will. Like the players know that stuff's going on. You know what I mean? Like, They're not dumb. They know what the deal is. So I do wonder how
I
much
thought there was some juice, like, though, in the second season. At any point, did you think there was some juice there, Brian, that they were going to go in the bubble and like galvanize and like rejuvenate the season?
No, I'll be honest. After about like midway through the season, I didn't buy it anymore. And obviously when Ben got hurt, that was a wrap.
But, right. Ben getting hurt, that 86. Yeah,
but even when they went to the bubble, no, I didn't really buy it, because they never showed it for any sustained. They never went on like that win 9 out of 10 thing that you kept waiting for all season last year. Just never happened.
That was another thing Anna Horford tweeted after Al got traded, was that she hated rooting for Philly. And it was like, yeah, Sixers fans didn't like rooting for Sixers last year. No. So, or Al Horford. So it was a strange time.
Let's talk some roster really quickly, because the Sixers lose a starter in Josh Richardson, a projected starter, and Al Horford, who ended up coming off the bench. So Seth Curry is our starting two guard now? Is that what we're thinking?
I guess.
Both you guys on the fence? All right, you can't both be on the fence.
Yeah, I'll say yes.
Would you prefer Shake? Would you prefer Seth? Is there a dark horse there?
I'd go Seth to start out and Shake off the bench. I'm like, it's hard to say because there's no backup center right now, so it's hard to say if, like,
well, I mean, Norvell might fill those minutes, you know, but as it pertains to now, we got Tobias maybe at the four, Joel at the five, Ben, and then
I'd be interested to see if they stick with Ben at the four more and as a roller like they did late in the season before he got hurt. But then that's what I was trying to think of. Do you start Shake? You can't really start Shake again.
Well, I'm curious. Yeah, what do you see, Brian? How do you see that Shake playing out?
Yeah, man, I was just looking up how many games Seth Curry started, like 78 games his career. So he started a very little bit, but he's been a bench guy almost his whole career. Mm-hmm. I do think that might be where he's comfortable. I might lean towards Shake, to be honest with you. I thought he played pretty good in that role. Now it just depends where they want to play Ben. Like, does Doc think Ben's a four, or does Doc think Ben's a one? Because that changes obviously where you move all the other pieces. So is Tobias a four, is Tobias a three? You know what I mean? All that kind of stuff. But
and it's a shame that we're three or four years into his career, we still don't know if he's a one or a four.
Exactly. I'm still not sure either. I mean, defensively it doesn't matter. He can guard everybody. Mm-hmm. But as far as who you have out on the floor with him, that's kind of where it matters.
For that point right there, I blame Brett Brown a bit for that, because when you go back to the lack of accountability and, you know, Ben's reluctance to shoot and not getting the line and things like that, like if you holding his feet to the fire on some of those things, maybe that his position and where he fits will kind of come into fruition. Whereas if you're letting them dictate to you when he shoots and how he plays and things like that, it's kind of like he's, you know, playing to his strengths all the time instead of finding things out about his game or getting to those uncomfortable places. But I mean, how do you guys see that?
I always thought Brett was a little gentle, and I don't think it's either like right or wrong. I remember in the Nets series when the Nets took game one and they were beating him in game two. And I think Boban said like halftime, he had never seen Brett Brown that angry or like that irate at them. And I think he maybe took it too easy on Ben or Joel over the course of his coaching career. I would love to be a fly on the wall for those last 3 years of just everything that happened, but it was definitely partly on Ben too, of not shooting. Like, he was definitely a little ignorant about it, but Brett, maybe it was since it was his first head coaching job, didn't want to push his young star players maybe past where he could, but I think it's blame on both parties.
Yeah. What I'm going to find interesting is there's not a ton of off the dribble right now on this team, not a ton off the dribble, especially from the perimeter. So that might factor into, you know, Seth Curry can do a lot of things. Well, I mean, he can drive a little bit, but that's not really, you know, his game. You want him out there shooting the rock. So
why I was curious about how things might shake out with Alec Burks, Brian. I kind of liked what he brought to the team. I know he's probably going to demand a high dollar or a dollar higher than the Sixers might want to pay, but that, you know, sometimes players take discounts to have a chance at the title or what have you. So he was a player who, as far as creating their own shot, I thought really took leaps and bounds in the bubble specifically. But I think we have a player that might handle some of those off the dribble, create your own shot issues. Dreams come into reach at Wilmington University. There's a local university that's ready to bring your dreams into reach. It's Wilmington University. WilmU helps working adults reach their career goals through accredited and affordable degrees and certificates to reach new heights in your field. WilmU works. Find out why at wilmu.edu. And at number 21 overall, the name Tyrese Maxey was called, and Sixers fans rejoiced because a lot of them didn't think that he would slip that far. The Sixers get a blue blood Kentucky player with the 21st overall pick, a kid who a combo guard can fill it up off the dribble. I'm sure, Kevin, I'll start with you, because we talked about players that the Sixers might select with that 21st overall pick. I know Desmond Bain was a guy you were huge on, but what do you make of this Maxey pick? I assume that you're excited like everyone else.
It is phenomenal. Last time you asked me about the best possible, you and Ben asked me about the best possible outcome. And I said, Cole Anthony slips. And that's because I had no intention or like idea that Tyrese Maxey would be there at 21. And every pick he didn't go, I just started sweating more. I'm like, there's no way he's going to draft the Sixers. And then he was there and then they took him, which just shouldn't happen. He's a fantastic.
Which doesn't normally happen.
He's a fantastic player. He's a really good defender, really smart defender, doesn't miss a lot of rotation, all over the floor. He's a little bigger, I think, than people realize. And then on the offensive end, he can dribble and he can shoot. He has a really good mid-range game. He's really known for his floaters.
You said shooting, but he shoots just over 29% from three. All right,
off the dribble shooting.
There we go.
Spot. It's a different kind of shooting. We're all used to catch and shoot on the Sixers, or lack of catch and shoot. Right. But he's got that little intermediate game, which I think is going to become more valuable in the
future. A little floater, a little something.
We see with the Sixers when they play that drop big coverage, that like the Terry Rozier's of the league just tear them up, because they give, it's defense is just allowing something or deciding what you want to give up to an offense. And if more teams are going to play that drop coverage and allow those floaters, those mid-range, then Tyrese Maxey is going to have a really bright future.
Yeah, he reminds me, Rozier's a good one. He also reminds me of like young Avery Bradley. Remember when Avery Bradley was young on the Celtics and he was like a real defensive dynamo, and on the right night, he'd get you 22. Mm-hmm. That's who he reminds me of. The first step when I watched him, like that's what just stuck out to me. They don't have a lot of guys that do that. Just like he sees the defender on him a little bit off balance and he's gone. And they just don't have a lot of that. So I thought that was huge. And he's just – Philly's going to love this dude. Like hustle plays, saving the ball out of bounds. He's just this dude's a winner. I just think they're going to love him. It's some of the stuff that drives us crazy when you see Marcus Smart doing it for the Celtics. And it's just like, how is this guy like impacting the game like this? I think Tyrese Maxey's going to do a lot of that stuff for the Sixers. And I just love the fit.
How do you see him fitting? You love the fit. How do you see him fitting on the floor with Ben?
I mean, I think he can play off Ben fine. I mean, no worries. Like I said, like Kevin said, he's not the spot up shooter, but he can play off Ben. He can, I mean, if you want to screen and roll with him with the ball and Ben screening, I think you can definitely do some of that. And then he can kick out or he can drive. Defensively, that would be pretty nasty too. And also in transition, like that, they're going to be just crazy athletic. Those guys running the floor together. I like Kyra Lewis for them. If he were to fall for a lot of the same reasons, he's a better shooter than Tyrese Maxey, but I think Tyrese Maxey might be a more explosive overall player and a better defender. So, I mean, I love the fit for him. I'm pretty stunned he was there. I got to be honest. I thought that guy was going like four. I thought the Celtics might take him at like 14 because he just seems like a guy Ainge loves. Ainge has a lot of those kind of guys over the years. But when Nesmith was there, I think the Celtics need shooting and they just couldn't pass. But then when he started sliding, like Kevin said, you know, like him and all the shooters that they had wanted were there. And I think it's telling that those shooters were there and then they still went with Maxey. And then obviously it turned into Seth Curry later. But I just think he's going to be really good. I think he's going to be better than 10 guys that were picked ahead of him, at least when we look back in 3-4 years.
Oh, yeah. This draft confused me a lot. There's just been a lot of question mark picks. And I don't know how Maxey lasted that long. And as good as the good of a draft as the Sixers have had, the Celtics have had a pretty terrible one, which is just fun to see. I don't like the Nesmith pick or the Peyton Pritchard pick at all, especially with the board that was there. So this is a good night for the Sixers.
Yeah, I think actually I like Nesmith for them. It just depends on if he's that good of a shooter. Obviously, he's not going to shoot 52% like he did last year. But if he is as good a shooter as he looks like he is, I mean, that's going to be pretty tough because he's just going to get wide open shots playing with
the at 14. That was way too early to take him. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, yeah. That felt like a very, like, need pick as opposed to, you know, just taking the best guy on the board. It definitely did feel like a need pick, which a lot of times.
Yeah, I agree with that.
I was going to ask you about that, Kevin. Why do you think he slid? Did you think it was the shooting percentage? But either way, you had to think, based on how the draft played out, that the Sixers had the Seth Curry deal kind of in their back pocket because they picked Maxey and when Bane was available and the kid from Stanford were available, they had a chance at those guys, but they acquiesced to the fact that they didn't need a shooter because they had Seth Curry waiting in the wings.
Yeah, if you can get like, you can fill a need at 21, and usually that happens at 21. You usually don't get like a – I don't think Maxey's going to be an all-star, perennial all-star, but he can maybe get there. I was amazed at the board that was there. I'm really glad they didn't take just a shooter. That's why I don't like the Nesmith pick for the Celtics. They had so many creators on the board, and they took just a shooter. And then you get a guy like Maxey who can command an offense – isn't the best shooter, but can understand how and where to be on the court on both ends of the floor. He's not going to be a liability on either end. And it was almost not failing upwards, but just falling into that Maxey pick and then knowing that, okay, we don't have to take Isaiah Joe at 21. That got leaked, but it didn't really hurt them in the end. They didn't have to jump the gun or trade up for him. So they didn't have to take Joe, and they didn't have to take a player like Joe and Seth Curry. So it's really a big win for the Sixers, like on many fronts, that they got Maxey in 21.
To see Desmond Bane and Tyrell Terry and Tyrese Maxey and see how good these guys are like in 3 or 4 years. Because,
yeah,
I mean, the ceiling is much higher for Maxey than the other two. It's just way higher.
Also, shout out Grizzlies for drafting Desmond Bane. They got a good one.
I do like Desmond Bane.
He's awesome.
Are you giving Daryl Morey credit for the tenor of this draft, how things have played out? Is he getting the lion's share of the credit here, even though he's been on the job for just a few short weeks?
I want to give it because I've never seen moves made like this since, like, 2016. Like, they worked the margins well all of a sudden. So it feels like it had to be the change of title that, like, got them all of these fantastic moves in one night. Like,
so you're saying this Hinkie-esque? Is that what you're saying?
It is Hinkie-esque.
Okay.
It's like Hinkie on steroids, maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, like, I think Sixer fans would have been thrilled just getting off a Horford period today, if that was the biggest thing that came out of this day.
Right.
They're excited. But to add a shooter like Seth Curry and to add a dude Maxey that has so much upside at 21, I mean, I don't know what you can't like. I mean, at least right now. We'll see what happens. But there's a lot to like right now.
Yeah.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Is this enough in your eyes to keep pace with teams like Milwaukee, Brooklyn, Milwaukee specifically, trying to make this Bogdanovich trade happen? Doesn't look like it's going to be, but they definitely are likely to acquire Drew Holiday. What do you make of how the Sixers made moves in order to better themselves as opposed to the other teams in the Eastern Conference?
I think at the very least, they're going to at least be fun to watch, and they're not going to want to claw your eyes out watching.
Fun to watch is not enough, Kevin.
That's the lowest. That's the, like, the least. That's the least thing, is that they're going to be fun to watch, and they won't be excruciatingly painful to watch on every night, every other night basis. And I think they've now put themselves in a position to retool where they weren't before. Where if they lose a role player, they lose a guy here and there, they can fill that need. But I think the Bucks are still in better position. I like the Drew. The Bucks are in mega win now mode. They played pretty poorly in the playoffs last year. I don't think that's the Bucks team. I think they're still probably the favorites in the East. The Raptors are probably going to load up again. They picked Malachi Flynn, who I love on that team. That is going to be an awesome Fred VanVleet replacement if he ends up leaving. I think the Sixers are in much better position. I think the Sixers are in the position that we thought they were in last year, of they can definitely contend and possibly knock off the Bucks.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the East is just really – it's top-heavy this year. I mean, it's really top-heavy when you add Brooklyn in too. So, I mean, the Sixers could be much, much better and still, like, coming fourth in the East. And I don't think that would be anything to be ashamed about. And then – you get in a playoff series and let's see what happens. But I think Indiana, a lot of people think they're going to lose Oladipo. So Indiana could fall off like a little bit, but I still think they'll be pretty solid. So those were six solid teams in the East last year. And you add in Brooklyn. If Toronto makes another run at it and doesn't retool, I mean, it's still going to be a dogfight, even though Sixers get a lot better. But to me, like, they're just a lot more functional, cohesive team right now than they were last year, where, like, the whole didn't match the sum of the parts. Like, it was the opposite last year.
There's got to be another trade coming, though. There has to be something else for this team, don't you think?
We don't know where James Harden's going yet.
Lord have mercy. Now you have to go all the way to the other end of the spectrum. Zach LaVine, maybe Buddy Hield, something like that. I mean, I just feel like there's another something else that a team needs to kind of keep pace and take the next step forward. Would you guys agree?
I'm in favor of them kind of rocking with Ben and Joel and surrounding them with role players. I think they've tried it like two or three times now with getting.
Okay, so more guys on the Seth Curry, Danny Green level.
Yeah, maybe
as
opposed to the Jimmy Butler, the Tobias Harris's. I think they've now tried it two or three, or the Al Horford's. They've tried it two or three times and it hasn't worked. I think they should give Ben and Joel the reins and see how it goes, or have faith in yourself that you can coach it and build the team around them well. but I would like to see maybe Tobias get traded. I know he just got engaged. I don't want to send him across the country, but if he ends up
Well, speaking of across the country, Landry Shamet is back in the Eastern Conference.
He's back.
Gosh.
Landry, yeah. But like, if they can flip Tobias for something now and get off that contract, that that would be so incredible. And it would like reset them financially to having no freedom to unlimited freedom with finances.
You're asking a lot. You are asking a lot.
But like, look what's happened in a week.
Yeah. The one weakness I still see is late in a tight game, shot clock's going down. Who's getting the ball and getting you a bucket? Mm-hmm. And just like in the playoff series last year where Boston had Kemba and Tatum to do that and the Sixers didn't have anybody to do that. That to me is still the issue. That's still the issue. What's up, Dan?
Do you feel like, though, that Joel's that guy, they run the double team at him, and now suddenly there are guys who can knock down shots he can pass the ball to?
Yeah, I do think it's better in that way, but sometimes you just need a guy that can do it on their own.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And most of the good teams definitely have a guy like that. And they're not even always like super like athletic drivers or whatever. Like Van Vliet and Lowry can do that. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like you just need a guy, right? Tough guys that are going to make a tough shot late in the shot clock when the other team has, you know, awesome defenders too, and they're up in your grill, and who's going to get you a bucket? That to me is still like the weakness that I can see being an issue late in games against good teams.
I don't think Maxey's going to be there right away, but he is an incredible finisher. He has excellent body control and contortion abilities, and he's one of those Van Vliet guys that just – there's no way he's going to make the – oh, it went in. Oh, okay. So, like, he's not going to be that in his rookie year, but maybe get him to a point where he can prove himself in that respect in 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I do think Shake has a little of that too. Mm-hmm. I think he can grow into that a little bit, and you're going to need Tobias to be able to do that sometimes. If I could see anything for the Sixers, it would be a more confident Tobias Harris next year. Like if they can just get him thinking like, look, dude, you're a max player. You're a 20 point scorer. Like take us home sometimes. And you know, if he can do that for them a little bit more, that would be huge too.
I heard both of you say though, that they aren't quite good enough as those other teams. Is there a name out there, a player who you think they should be targeting or you hope that the team would acquire in order to be at that elite level of in the Eastern Conference?
Just this like little known point guard, James Harden, to help. But like realistically, Peeled would be a good one. I think a good get.
Who we talked about. Yep.
Yeah. Just another solid shooter to play off of those.
And maybe with the Bogdanovich deal falling through and he's just a restricted free agent now, that might open up the possibility that they could trade Buddy.
Mm-hmm.
I think Bogdanovich is more the kind of guy.
Like, okay.
Bogdanovich is the type of dude who's not scared, makes all kinds of huge shots. Zach LaVine, I think would be good, even though some of his percentages aren't always great. Like look at the team he's on. You put him on a much better team. Now, can they get Zach LaVine for what they have left? I'm not really sure, but if they could get it's a guy like that to me, like a wing who can get his own shot and make tough shots late in the shot clock. That's the one thing that they're missing to me from going up to the very top echelon of the East.
Yeah, watching fourth quarter Jason Tatum's always tough. It's just
exactly. Like exactly. And Boston had two of them. You know, when Boston had Tatum and Kemba, it's just it's tough to compete with that. Yeah. That's why. Right. They were in a couple of those games late, but you saw who had those guys and who didn't. And it's just hard for a big man to be that guy as good as Joe is.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to get him the ball in those spots.
Yeah, because if you're a defense – yeah, go ahead, Dan.
No, I was just thinking that between, you know, the names you throw out there, I feel like Buddy Hield, man, is still that guy who you won't have to pay a king's ransom for most likely because he's unhappy. And then he would fit so well here. So that's still the guy for me. I'm hoping that they can try to figure out a way to get him in Philly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I always thought Hield would be a great fit. Seth Curry's presence makes it like a little, makes you need a Buddy Hield maybe a little less.
Mm-hmm.
Just because he's just such an awesome three-point shooter. It's a lot of the same skill set. I mean, he doesn't give you that much in terms of creation or like getting his own shot. He's more of like a catch and shooter. So I feel like you're getting a lot of that with Seth Curry anyway.
Mm-hmm.
He is Brian Brennan, and that is the Kevin Rice from Temple University. I'm Danny Pommels. This has been Sixers Talk brought to you by Wilmington University. We appreciate you tuning in as always. Be sure to catch us next time here on the podcast. Thanks again.